it's now time for our featured segment. It is called Mic Check Anthony. And the fact that you even mentioned the passing of the Queen, the big question is, what does this mean? What does the Queen death now mean for the monarch? And it's not going to sit well with a lot of people, you know. Charles is now the king, but that's for another program, Anthony Turner. I'm sorry for Maxi Priest and his, you know, his little mishap there. Our featured guest has arrived, Anthony Turner. I'm not sure who's checking out Bernard Lodge Inwood Estate. There's an historic unsettled land tenure issue going on there. This morning, we're going to zone in on Bernard Lodge and Inwood Estate, Anthony. We're going to zone in on Michael Lee Chin. We need full disclosure, full transparency and accountability. We nah ease up Anthony Turner. No 9-day wonder around here. Our guest has arrived. Introduce our guest, Anthony. She's no stranger.
Yes, our special guest on Mic Check, as you said, no stranger to Growing Radio, Professor Rosalie Hamilton. She is the CEO of the Lasco Chin Foundation. And Professor Hamilton was Vice President at the University of Technology, Jamaica from 2008 to 2018. And she was awarded a professorship in the Scotiabank Chair in Entrepreneurship and Development, and she established and led the MSME Alliance, a network of small business organizations, for 10 years. She also established the Institute of Law and Economics and worked as a consultant and public educator on trade, governance, gender, and other areas of economic and social development. And as chair of the Caribbean Philanthropic Alliance, he's helping to mitigate the impact of climate change and fostering sustainable development by leading a Caribbean tree planting project in a 22 Caribbean countries territory. So we welcome Professor Rosalie Hamilton to Grooving Radio on a Saturday morning once again.
Good morning, Professor. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
I am good. How is Jamaica this morning before we get into it?
Jamaica as well. Mm-hmm. You know, we continue to make ends meet and survive. Of course, the death of the head of state mm-hmm. is an issue. Mm-hmm. There are Jamaicans who are mourning mm-hmm. and respectfully, mm-hmm. and there are others who are reminded of our loss mm-hmm. For decades, for centuries. Mm-hmm. Under colonial rule. Mm. So it's a mixed emotion.
Yeah.
There are others who are just trying to make ends meet, and they're moving on with life.
Indeed, indeed. Well, let me go back. Let me stay in Jamaica, Kingston, Jamaica, on Monday, September 5th. The Advocate Network joined many Jamaicans in expressing deep concern and unease about Michael Lee Chin's plan to convert 3,000 acres of agricultural land for real estate development in a time where food insecurity is a problem around the world globally. What is happening here? What is the red flag in the room, Professor Hamilton? Because there must be one. Hmm? What's going on at Bernard Lodge Inwood Estate?
I think the loud cry has to do with this matter of food security, mm-hmm. as well as the issues having to do with landlessness. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about estate land. So there's a loud reminder of our past, our history. Mm-hmm. So I think those are the two issues that have come together that has really created outrage. Mm-hmm. On the former, you're aware, everybody's aware of global warming mm-hmm. and climate change. And the scientists are telling us that, you know, as the climate gets warmer, we're going to lose agricultural yield. The estimate across the world is about a third. And it suggests that it will take three times more land to produce the same food. Uh-huh. Now, while it's important to say that Jamaica will never become food sufficient,
right.
You know, there has to be just the scale and nature of our diet will require that. But the analysts also tell us that, you know, we can grow certain crops here in Jamaica and uniquely as well. That's the story of coffee or ginger, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And so the displacement of some of that import is important, not only for these unique agricultural products that we can have, but importantly reducing our import bill.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so there are lots of issues associated with that matter of taking agricultural land out of use, especially large contiguous acreage of land that is irrigated. Mm-hmm. That's another issue.
Mm-hmm.
It is the best large plot of land that's fully irrigated across Jamaica. That's what the analysts tell us.
Prime.
And so that's a real concern.
Prime agricultural land. But Anthony, and I want the listeners to listen to this piece. At emancipation in 1834, some lands were made available for freed African who purchased them and built houses and cultivate the land. I mean, as we seek full disclosure here, Professor Rosalie Hamilton, have anyone seen any kind of contracts that is signed of how Michael Lee Chin garnered this prime agricultural land? You're talking about, I think the entire estate was close to 6,000 acres. And he's going to build housing on this prime agricultural land? Isn't this a problem?
You know, the call for transparency is driven because there's uncertainty about the nature of the lease. And the initial information came out from the Gleaner. I think all the society was thinking that it was 3,000 acres that is in contention. And apparently, the information the Gleaner presented to the public suggested that about 40% of that 3,000 acres were already zoned for residential use. So the initial information was that, well, they're going to convert all of this 3,000 acre change of use. That was the view, and everybody was outraged. But there's even more questions to be asked about why about 40% of that was already converted. And so when he got it, he had a piece of a lease on a property that was already zoned for residential use. So the question that we're posing then is, what is the justification for that zoning?
Mm-hmm.
That's the key issue now, because the very development order that was passed in just before, in fact, he got that. It was passed, I think, in July, July the 4th, 2019.
Mm-hmm.
And the lease was the July the 5th, 2019. And that order, that development order, requires that development that will cause a lot of productive agricultural land. There must be evidence of the need for the development, the residential development or whatever development that will take place, that overrides agricultural consideration. And that there is no alternative site on non-agricultural lands available. So these are two pieces of information that I think the public needs to understand. And it's important because, again, in the context of the climate change issues, taking good agricultural land out of use is one thing, but then are there alternatives? And again, analysts have said that there are alternative lands that are suitable for housing development in Perthshire and other places. And so the call for confirming development orders that having to do with Kingston and St. Andrew could yield and provide other alternatives. And so those are questions that are being posed. Why is that development order for Kingston and St. Andrew not passed? Right. And it's important. It's part of a larger discussion about the high-rise buildings that we're seeing all over the place and the breaches associated with it and so on and so on. In fact, the term chaka-chaka development has been used because there don't seem to be the kinds of urban development order that is that is required, I think.
Right.
In the
model. One second, Anthony. Program note here, ladies and gentlemen. You are listening to Groovin' Radio. We are in our featured segment. It is called Mic Check. The Advocate Network zoning in on Bernard Lodge, Inwood Estate, land threatens food security. Anthony Turner, your question.
Yeah, good morning, Professor. Just for the clarity of our listeners, some of whom may have left Jamaica a long time and may not be so familiar with the whole Bernard Lodge, Inwood Estate. Can you, because when I was growing up, I'm from Westmoreland, Frome, where, you know, sugarcane was plentiful and, you know, that's where a lot of the sugar was manufactured. Just explain to our listeners about why Bernard Lodge and Inwood, why it's such a prime agricultural land and why building residential homes would be such a, you know, a negative, you know, why these are such prime real estate, I mean, agricultural lands.
So first of all, again, just locating it in the history, mm-hmm. we're talking about land that for centuries mm-hmm. is used for sugar plantations.
Right.
Planting sugar cane. And more recently, over the past few decades, there was major investment in irrigating the property in that piece of land. So in terms of proper agricultural infrastructure, in terms of irrigation, that's where that land is. That's what is available. And farmers are talking about it in that context because the scale of investment that's required to modernize and upgrade is one thing. And in fact, arguably, if that is what is being done, mm-hmm. maybe a good thing because, you know, you want to upgrade equipment, etc. But I think the concern has to do with the residential development and the loss of that land.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about a significant portion of property. I think the figures are 1,200 acres of land, 1,218 to be precise, acres of land that are zoned for residential use.
Mm-hmm.
So therein lies the issue. Large contiguous acreage, fully irrigated, that is being now zoned mm-hmm. for residential development.
You know,
and I think the controversy lies there.
Yeah, this lease, Professor, with Michael Leachin, it smells and look like the bauxite lease that we see down in the country areas, in the Cockpit country, where, you know, you're telling me that this wasn't going to be mined, and then all of a sudden it's zoned to be mined. So this wasn't going to be a part of the development, but now it is zoned to be a part of development. And Anthony, listeners, listen to this carefully now. The Moran Bay Rebellion uprise. Think about what sparked the Moran Bay Rebellion uprise, Anthony. Primarily over the discontent with land tenures issue, which remain unsolved today. We're still going through these issues in Jamaica. And as I mentioned earlier on, food insecurity. Why can't we have food security instead of food insecurity? And how is it, Professor Hamilton, how is it that the government will sit and allow, and when you have these prime location where Inwood and Bernard Lodge is located, it is centrally located in Jamaica. This is flat land. This is prime land for farming. Why aren't we investing more? Look at the import bill in Jamaica. Why aren't we investing more in farming and less in fighting crime and violence. Look how much we have spent on crime and violence in Jamaica, and it's still spiraling out of control. And now we want to shut down and close out the small farmers and families that can hardly afford to go anywhere else in developing Inwood Estate. And when Mr. Chin build these homes, he's going to give you the mortgage over at NCB. He's going to provide you with the mortgage over at NCB. So have we now manipulated the entire system, Professor Hamilton? Have we just put everything in the hands of a few Jamaicans like Michael Leachin? Have we done that?
Well, you know, that's an ongoing conversation about how Jamaica's been organized. I mean, we know that, again, the history of Jamaica under the colonial rule is a history in which the society was organized in the interests of a few. That's our inheritance. I think the challenge since emancipation and more importantly since independence, when the control of government is finally in our hands, is what have we really done? Have we done enough to broaden the base of our society, to transform that inherited structure that is set up in the interests of a few? And are we now recognizing, and have we recognized enough, that we have to provide basic needs and organize our institutions such that we meet the needs of the majority of the Jamaican people? That's a discussion. So we have built more schools, we've done some things. But even if we think about our educational system, so we build schools, but the quality of the education is still a problem. And we still have the best schools just a few people can go to. And the majority are lacking in the kinds of opportunities that others have. So the same is true for land. Do we have a framework in which we're creating opportunities for the landless? No, people are not inheritedly the fact of people, the landlessness in Jamaica, we have to remember, you know, how do you get land? You either buy land or you inherit land. And unfortunately, we weren't part of that generation. Many of us, our ancestors, did not inherit land. So we have to work hard. And you have, in this case of Bernard Lodge, for example, farmers who've been working that land, they were working the land. They were taken off. 40% of them were given alternative places to farm. But they would tell you that it's inadequate. There are irrigation issues. It's not suitable. Their crops are failing. So that's one thing. But 60% are still struggling with the promises that were made. They were promised to alternative plots of land. They were promised compensation and so on. And that's what they're saying. So it tells you, how, if you did that, this is, it's live, as you're rightly saying. This is a historical process. This is not new. So here we've seen live farmers who historically have been displaced. When you displace farmers, you minimize their capacity to buy land because they farm for a living. So we've seen this kind of moving people off land they're squatting, no adequate provision of alternative land and tenure in the land. Because it's either you have a long-term lease or you own. And if you have neither, you're literally a tenant or a squatter. And so that's the context in which all of this is happening. So there's important issues to be raised with respect to what is happening to our farmers and by extension what is happening to their families and the people of Jamaica that have not sufficiently benefited from the historical development of lands, of housing, of a range of services that we need, educational benefits, health, etc. This is a long story, and the today's manifestation of these issues are now being evident in front of us in the context of a Bernard Lodge and Inwood Estate.
Haven't we learned anything as a country Haven't we learned anything from the Morant Bay uprising? And whatever happened to the persons who worked? Because oftentimes it is said that persons who worked on many of these sugar estates were often given land as part of their compensation for working there for over the many, many years. Whatever happened to that, Professor? Whatever happened
to...
That's a good point.
That's a good point, because you can be given land. We see it all the time. It happens today. Mm-hmm. You're given land, but you don't have proper legal tender.
Mm.
What that has to translate is a formal long-term lease that you can use and you can trade and so on. Again, with adequate permission to do that, right? To sublease, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Or... you own it. You have a title, a registered title.
Right.
And if you have neither, you do not have adequate land tenure. And so that's the issue today.
Mm.
80% of all farms in Jamaica, right, are of that 80%, I should say, only, because we're talking about available farmland, right?
Mm-hmm.
Of that 80%, only 15% is in the hands of small farmers.
You know, go ahead, Professor. Go ahead.
No, as you said, that's the context of all of this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you want to give these farmers tenure, give them the land, give them lease, or give them a framework in which you can't just kick them off as if they're animals and ask them to make do on land that's not comfortable, or provide compensation that takes 2-3 years, 10 years to get. That's not adequate.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we have to do better for people. This is an issue that has been going on for much too long. And I think that our advocacy is to highlight this troubling problem and to bring some semblance of agreement about the way forward.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to say this. This is not an argument about large development of agricultural development or access to large swaths of lands in the hands of people who are able and capable.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to make that point, because part of our development or complex development in a modern world will require that.
Mm.
But I think as we contemplate who owns and controls these large swaths of land, we have to be mindful of the transition of many of our people. That includes people in the diaspora.
Indeed.
That have left because they lacked the opportunities to progress in life.
Mm-hmm.
And they went to pastures that they saw as greener, that enabled them to live the life that they want. And we commend people in the diaspora that have done that and have done well.
Mm-hmm.
They too are able and capable of owning large swaths of land and doing significant agricultural development.
Mm-hmm.
Are there opportunities to put the land in their hands? These are the questions we have to ask.
Mm. And that is why we want full disclosure. We're asking for full transparency and accountability from Michael Lee Chin and the folks who are involved with displacing these people. Anthony, earlier on you asked a question of, you know, the importance of Bernard Lodge and Inwood Estate. When a place is irrigated and is ready to just drop the seeds on the ground and it will grow, and you're taking these people and you're displacing them, you're giving them lands that is not irrigated, you're giving them land that is not fertile and is far away from water, and you know we have a water issue in Jamaica. No, this is not supposed to be happening in the 21st century. And I mean, going way back to emancipation, where some of these lands were made available, Anthony, for people like those who are on it right now. It is sad to see how we're displacing the average Jamaican and increasingly billing these urban sprawl. Who benefits from that? And that's where we're going to start when we come back, Professor. Who really benefits from these large urban sprawl that is now being constructed in Jamaica? You're listening to Groovin' Radio. My name is Rasklim. And as the Advocate Network says, Professor Hamilton, we nah ease up. We not easing up. No 9-day wonder around here. How you gonna talk about you want to remove Titchfield High School from where it is to build airport because it's next to the sea course? All those conversations are taking place in Jamaica, folks. When we come back, after the 11 o'clock hour, we will continue with our special guest, Professor Rosalie Hamilton. Stay where you are.
Hi, this is Marcy Griffiths.
This is Max Supreme.
This is Mikey Spice.
Listen, Ashentia.
I sing a melody representing
blessed love and honor. This is Janine.
Yo, this is Bunchy Garland all the way from Trinidad and Tobago.
We're grooving on the radio. The Rasklim, keep it like IKEA said that.
It's powerful, it's informative, it's educational with lots of thought-provoking conversations. Yes, it's Groovin' Radio, Saturday morning 9 to 11:30 and Sunday evening 6 to 8. Right here on 93.5 WVIP, hosted by Ross Klem. Join the Groovin' Radio experience and stay one step ahead.
Accepting our offer to be part of our Broadway cast includes dinner every evening at any five-star Manhattan restaurant.
Thank you, but no thank you. When I'm in New York, I only eat at the door.
Have you ever eaten at any five-star Manhattan restaurant?
Huh? Five-star or five-trillion star. Me uncle name at the door.
The door.
The door.
The door. The door. Elegance. Fine dining. Our professional staff is here to serve you.
And most importantly, great Jamaican foods. For elegant dining and authentic Jamaican food.
Because I'm a pre-K teacher, I was teaching all last year with children who weren't vaccinated and who weren't able to get vaccinated, and I had to be more diligent about my mask and their masks. But I want to see a world where we're not wearing masks. My name is Henna. I'm a pre-K teacher, and I have a five-year-old and a three-month-old. Aura loves to create things. We go to the playground a lot, and she loves playing with her little baby brother. I think the vaccination is important for 6 months to 5 years because the more people that are vaccinated, the safer we all can be, the more we're going to avoid a faster spread and severe cases. I am a teacher and a parent, and I'm getting my children vaccinated against COVID-19 to help everyone be safe and to help them be safe.
A message from the New York City Health Department.
Blessed love, this is Dwayne Stevenson from Augustown. And anytime I find myself in a New York state of mind, you know, I always tune in to Groovin' Radio, night or day. I so we play. Keep it grooving.
And thank you so much, Mr. Dwayne Stevenson. And that is how we welcome you back, ladies and gentlemen, to the final 25 minutes of our Groovin' Radio's presentation this Saturday morning. And thank you so much for being a part of the Groovin' Radio experience. Speaking of vaccination, ladies and gentlemen, Moderna and Pfizer, they have now rolled out specific booster shot for Omicron variant. Yes, the CDC is now saying, the head of the CDC is now saying that those who need it the most, if you're eligible for a booster shot, you should go and take it, because here it is now. It is now said that COVID might just be the new flu and an annual vaccine may be necessary. And mask mandate, this past week, Governor Kathy Hochul have now rolled back the mask mandate for public transportation that was in effect for over 2 years now. So you can now travel on the train. It's up to you. Train on buses without wearing a mask. Our featured segment, Mic Check, this morning, we're zoning in on Bernard Lodge and the Inwood Estate. The land issued there, ladies and gentlemen. We are looking for full transparency, full disclosure, and we want to hold these people accountable. Yes. Welcome back, Professor Hamilton. Professor?
Yes, thank you.
Welcome back. Anthony Turner, welcome back.
Yes, yes.
Before we took the break, Professor, I closed out by talking about urban sprawls. Urban sprawls being constructed across Jamaica. Who benefits from these? Who benefits from this? Developers or and folks with monies?
You know, again, obviously, if we're talking about high-rise buildings, you know, with a price tag that starts at $30 million, $50 million Jamaican dollars, then the only people benefit are those who can afford to buy these properties or lease them. You know, there are lots of apartments available now, but the capacity to rent is an issue. But, you know, urban development goes beyond just the housing. I mean, I think what we saw was an important piece of urban development in the development of Emancipation Park, for example. You know, a place right in the center of Kingston where many Jamaicans are able to walk, relax, and remember what emancipation was all about. That was a significant development, and there are others. I think the debate today is what are the rules that guide this urban development? Are we complying with these rules? Are people able to skirt these rules? And what are the consequences when people skirt these rules? These are the questions. Who is able to skirt the rules and who are not able to? And so it's an ongoing conversation, especially in Kingston and St. Andrew, where we're seeing rapid development taking place. We're seeing the consequences for sewage in the area, the consequences for traffic, for noise, as well as dust pollutants, you know. You have it's troubling. And so, again, other advocates, there are advocates now that have emerged that are talking about rights to the city, you know, and notices, for example, for development that is set up in obscure places, and people only know that these developments are going to take place when the tractors start to roll in and the fences start to go up. So we have to look again at these development orders. There in 2017, there was a provisional development order for Kingston and St. Andrew and the Pedro Keys. And the idea is that that ought to be confirmed. And with the confirmation, flows, issues, regulation, and arrangements that can facilitate and enable a smoother and more orderly urban development.
Professor, just to be transparent, I just wanted to mention that Michael Leachin, he actually has, you know, rubbished the whole report that he's abandoning this whole agricultural farmland in Innswood. I'm not sure how you respond to that. But who is it?
Let me quickly say, though, it's important to note that he has the lease, to the best of our understanding, about 60% of it is still in agricultural use, zoned for agricultural use. And so I think the questions we would want to pose is, what are those plans? Are those sustainable plans? And that's where the rubber hits the road, because, you know, we've seen large-scale agricultural development that failed. We've seen the ravages of hurricanes and so on. So, again, these are issues which, you know, I think a kind of clinical look at what is being proposed is important. So there are two issues, I think, that's on the table with respect to the lease that Leachin has and his company has. I think that lease was, in fact, with his company. Trying to remember the name of the company now. But the access to that property is to be developed, and there are two pieces of information. One, agriculture development, and two, residential. It's the Model Agricultural Production Limited. That's the company that has this lease from the Jamaica Sugar Company of Jamaica Holdings, right? The Sugar Company of Jamaica Holdings, right? SCJ. Now, so the hope. I'm still hopeful that the 60 acres of land will be used productively for agricultural use. And if so, I don't think that there'd be a lot of complaints as long as the displaced farmers are adequately compensated and so on and so on. Mm-hmm. So the question is, if it's not viable farming, that's another big question. And then, of course, the secondary issue has to do with the residential. Mm-hmm. Is that the best place to put residential?
But Professor, some would argue, and Professor and Mr. Leachin, who is a businessman, may argue that he is really in the business of making money. So is he the one that we need to hold accountable, or the government, because he's really in the business of making money? So,
well, we hope that his capacity to make money aligns with increasing agricultural production.
Mm-hmm.
And if it does, we'll be fine.
Mm-hmm.
I think the problem is when the money is made and there's no comparable agricultural yield and benefit to the people of Jamaica. Because the reality is that we're going to our supermarkets every day and shops and markets, and we are seeing prices for food that is staggering. And I can say I live fairly comfortably here in Jamaica. And I am stunned. I have to look twice at my supermarket bill.
And
I have to ask myself what I could have bought last year. I'm spending twice as much for the same thing. So it is troubling. And if in fact that large scale production can reduce the cost of food to the Jamaican people, it would be a good thing.
No.
So the devil is in the details in terms of what is being done.
You know, we see what's taking place in the Ukraine. Let me say this. Michael Leachin can rubbish as much as he wants to rubbish, and we buy into these things. Michael Leachin is a businessman. He's not a farmer. Michael Leachin is into banking. He's not a farmer. So when we repeat that Michael Leachin rubbished the idea that he's going to develop these land, where I am rubbishing what Michael Leachin is saying. Because Michael Leachin, who owns NCB, is the one that's going to develop the land, is the one that's going to give you the mortgage. And true to be told, in Jamaica, public government workers and some public sectors workers in Jamaica, in order for them to get paid, they have most of their pay go through NCB. So Michael Leachin is making money left, right, and center from these people. It's time we start looking away from the Donald Trump style of governance in Jamaica, where the government shut us down and these big businessmen shut us down. All they're creating in Jamaica with these BPOs and whatever they're building in Jamaica is these minimum wage jobs that keep our people in poverty, that keep our people, when we have 20% of the country living at or below the poverty line. Don't tell me Michael Leachin is a businessman. It's all about making money. What about the common decency? What about the common decency of going back to emancipation? And what about the common decency of coming out of the Morant Bay Rebellion? What sparked the Morant Bay Rebellion uprising? It's the same land issue in Jamaica. And who benefits the most here? The brown people, the light-skinned people. And I have one more thing before we go this morning, Professor, because you brought it up, and you brought up the environment. So what is the National Environmental Protection Agency, NEPA? What are they saying about these developments? And, I mean, all these massive development taking place. Are we holding contractors? Are we holding developers accountable for all the dust and stuff like that that's been spewed over the island? Because we're not holding them responsible for the bauxite thing. Look what happened the other day at the Ryakobi River.
So you're absolutely right that the accountability is accountability to the people who we ask to represent us. So the advocacy is about holding government accountable. As long as we are in a free market economy, we can only appeal to the private sector to obey the law and to do it with good conscience. The only compulsion we have is when they break the law. So the question we have to focus on is the governance arrangement that enables Jamaican people to have a voice, to begin to influence and shape policy in a much more direct way and indirect way through our representatives. And so whether it is NEPA, the National Environmental Protection Agency, or any other government agency, we are doing our civic duty and our responsibility to hold them accountable. So these are the questions we're posing to our government and the agencies that are seeking to represent us. We want to see these lands and transactions in a transparent way. We want to be assured that everything is above the law, and we want to ensure that all people are dealt with fairly and transparently.
You know, the Advocate Network is one of those groups in Jamaica who has become the voice for the voiceless. We have too many voiceless people in Jamaica. And without a group like the Advocate Network, these things will just lie there and linger and dies. But we cannot afford to make these things continue happening in our country. We have to stop looking at these people. People that look like Michael Leachin, people that look like Bogdanovich, who have tons of money, just throwing around and buying up everything and taking everything away from the hard-working Jamaicans. People who have toiled every single day just to make a living. I did an interview recently with a lifelong educator from Camperdown High School, and she told me that they did a survey, and the survey is what kind of work the parents of the students of Camperdown High School does, what kind of work they do. And over 60% of them, Professor Hamilton, over 60% of them listeners are just common hustlers on the street, common vendors on the street. How so? So when we talk about equality and we talk about the education system that we have, these people are struggling, Professor Hamilton, to send their children to school. So the time has come. The time has come for us to stop cherry picking the conversations that we have. Stop holding on to our tongues because these people have a couple $1 million. No, truth to be told, they're displacing many people in Jamaica. And this is one of the issues. Bernard Lodge, Inwood Estate, the unsettled land tenure issue there is a major problem in Jamaica. I'm done. Anthony Turner.
Yeah, what I wanted to say, Professor, because history has taught us that in Jamaica over the years, any issue that comes to the fore, it's discussed in the media, and in 10, 15 days, nothing happens, and it goes, it's business as usual. How can we, especially us in the diaspora, ensure that, you know, an issue like this continues to be discussed and, you know, the authorities are held, are those in authority are held responsible?
By doing exactly what you're doing, engaging this conversation in an ongoing way, inviting persons, including members of the government, to speak, to answer the questions that you have. And I think that if all of us play a role, it's not just the work of the Advocates Network. We are all citizens, individuals, organizations who are committed to good governance and to promoting human rights. And we are doing our part. We urge all Jamaicans, including Jamaicans in the diaspora, to do your part, to pose the question, make up your mind, have a conversation, and learn, because there's a lot to learn. I mean, where we are now is that we're beginning to unearth pieces of our history that has been hidden from us in a very deliberate way. And now, thanks to social media and other ease of communication, we're now able to get access to the information. And so I ask the question, when you have the information, when it's credible information, what do you do about it?
Right.
Is it business as usual, or are we going to push for a better society? And how we push is important, because we have to rebuild It's not just about tearing down and mashing up.
Mm-hmm.
We have to be able to rebuild.
Mm-hmm.
And we need sufficient consensus across all parts of our society in order to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so the compromises have to be made. We have to be tolerant of each other. We have to listen to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And we ought to be guided by that very important African tradition, Ubuntu.
Mm-hmm.
I am because you are.
Indeed.
We are all Jamaicans because of all of us.
Indeed.
I can't be a Jamaican by myself.
Mm.
And our presence in a global environment is very much that.
Mm.
All of us together, good and bad,
indeed,
defines who we are as Jamaicans.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to care about each other and care about how we express ourselves, care about how we communicate, care about what has happened in the past, and what is currently happening.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's when we engage this kind of constructive conversation,
yes, indeed,
about rethinking the status quo. It's,
right.
It's what, you're right, it's time. It is more than 60 years.
Yes, indeed.
It's time for us to have these hard conversations about how to restructure a society that was set up in the interest of a few, to a society that can benefit the majority.
Mm. You know, Professor, my shoulder is not broader than anybody else's shoulder. But I got to thank my major sponsor of this program, the Door Restaurant, the Smokehouse Restaurant, for making it possible, Kingston Corner Shop, for making it possible for us to have conversations like these. Because if no one else wants to have them, we will have them. As I said before, my shoulder is not broader than anyone else's shoulder. But, if Marcus Garvey had just sat there and watched, where would we be today? If Paul Bogle just sat there and watched, where would we be today? Somebody have to take up the challenge and have these conversations. That's why the Advocate Network is doing what they're doing. That's why Grooving Radio is doing what we're doing. I had a lengthy conversation this week with Mr. Greg Christie from the Integrity Commission, and he had the nerve to tell me that there's certain conversation that he doesn't want to have publicly. So why are you head of the Integrity Commission, Mr. Christie? Why? Why are you running away? I don't see the folks here in who have a seat at the table running away from the conversation. No, we want full disclosure. No more 9-day wonders around here. Full transparency and accountability. What I say? We nah ease up. Professor Rosalie Hamilton, thank you so much. Thank you so much
for
always being so gracious. Thank you so much for always willing to come and have these conversations. Because as we say, nah ease up. Take care, Professor.
Thank you for having me.
You're so welcome. We'll do it again. One love. Anthony Turner, we're at that moment where we're going to have to wrap and make room for the next presentation, which is going to be the Wake Up Radio team. Carby Moxie and Sister Debo awaits us after the 11:30 hour. The Jam at 1. At 6 p.m. it's going to be Link Up. And at 8, it's going to be Soundchat. I got the memo, Anthony.
So big award.
I got the memo. I'll talk about it tomorrow. Until then, Anthony, you take care. One love.
Yeah, man. Listen.
Take care. Ladies and gentlemen, Grooving Radio was executively produced by who? Clement Hume. Hosted by, and Christopher Roberts. Hosted by who? I, Ras Clem. Contributing to our presentation this morning, our musical presentation, we went down to St. Anne's and we joined Busy Signal. In our community engagement segment, the nurses, the Jamaica Nurses Group of New York, they're celebrating 60 years, ladies and gentlemen, and they're going to be having their 60th luncheon come next week, Sunday. Mrs. Claudette Powell joined us this morning. We got a brand new song in there from G-Wiz. It's entitled, We Now Ease Up. We got news courtesy of the Jamaica Gleaner, Jamaica Now with Mr. Jovan Johnson. Anthony Turner joined us for Entertainment Report. He is our writer. He provided the bio for our very special mic check guest, no stranger to Grooving Radio, Professor Rosalie Hamilton, the former VP at the University of Technology, Jamaica. She's now the CEO of the Lasker Chin Foundation. Once again, my name is Ras Clem. I leave you peace, love, and blessings.